Welcome everyone to Wise Talk. This is Mariposa's monthly leadership forum. Today we're excited to have Andrea Liberstein. Andrea is a mindful eating expert, speaker, mindfulness-based stress reduction instructor, a registered dietitian, nutritionist, a mindfulness-based coach, and a registered yoga instructor. She's been teaching mindfulness meditation since 1993 and leads mindful eating and well-nourished retreats and trainings at renowned retreat centers internationally. Andrea trains health professionals in mindfulness-based eating awareness training and maintains a private practice. She was a leader in developing and implementing mindfulness and mind-body-spirit programs at Kaiser in Northern California for over 20 years. She is also the author of a new book, Well-Nourished, Mindful Practices to Heal Your Relationships with Food, Feed Your Whole Self, and End Overeating. She's also a contributing author to Resources for Teaching Mindfulness, an international handbook, and the Relaxation and Stress Reduction Workbook. You can visit her websites at mindfuleatingtraining.com and yourwellnourishedlife.com. You can also follow her on Twitter, which is how we found her. She's at well_nourished_. So before we get into the dialogue, I want to say thank you so much for being with us, and I'm looking forward to this phone call.
Thank you, Sue. Happy to be here today.
Good. So I always start with the same question because we've done this now for 15 years, and we're always interested in your journey and what prompted you or inspired you to write your book, Well Nourished. So talk to us about that, if you would.
Okay. All right. Well, I was very fortunate in that a publisher contacted me.
Nice.
Several publishers a few years ago, and I've always had probably have two or three books in me, and this was one of them. So really happy to have that opportunity. So this is kind of a current culmination of a lot of work, of a lot of body of work. I've been a mindfulness-based stress reduction instructor. Stress reduction instructor, a mindfulness meditation teacher, and a nutritionist for many years. And I've always been interested, what really guided me to this was finding the way that I felt that I could most help and serve people to live a fully well-nourished life from the inside out,
mm-hmm.
as well as the inside in. So that inside out was really important to me because of course, our outside circumstances, life circumstances, we have only limited control over. So what do we need to develop, to be in touch with, the kinds of resources so we can navigate life from a place of balance and have more joy and more peace and fulfillment. So I will say about almost 10 years ago now, a pivotal point where I began to focus more on food and mindfulness and that living a well-nourished life was when I became an instructor and a consultant on a mindful eating study, and it was just really just found this work to be so rewarding, the shifts, the very important shifts and transformation that can happen around mindfulness and food and eating. And then in my work over the last 10 years, which has been built upon while my work in mind body medicine, Kaiser, my own practices that I've been doing for many, many years in mindfulness, in yoga, and meditation, really expanded us to looking at how do we live a well-nourished life, that we are resilient and nourished and fulfilled in all the areas that are important to us so that we don't need to, for example, turn to food to fill those needs or those holes. But it could be anything else instead of food. It could be alcohol. It could be just watching too much TV, right, internet addiction, which is really common these days, really, very compelling, but what are we maybe spending our time on numbing ourselves with or filling up with instead of living from that balanced place and having tools to resource ourselves from the inside out.
So you started out talking about, you know, in your career, you've done nutrition, and so obviously nourishment from nutrition has been important, but you also have decided to take that as a metaphor for nourishment for your whole body and your whole self.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's great. So that's the basis of what we want to talk about today. So what does it mean to you to have a mindful relationship with food, and how is mindful eating related to what we typically think of as mindfulness, which is about meditation?
Yeah, well, they're inseparable. So the come from place where we start is developing this mindful way of being with ourselves, with our relationship to food. So developing this kind, compassionate, non-judging way of being with our experience, with ourselves, through mindfulness practice. And we hear this all the time. So what is mindfulness practice? I'm actually talking about establishing a regular practice of meditation. And there's so many ways and resources how to do that now, and apps and programs and classes. And it doesn't have to be, you know, an hour a day or even 30 minutes a day, but even something as short as 10 minutes a day can make a difference. And it's a great place to start, or immersing oneself in a retreat to really get that jump start of what this is. And then we can begin to really be mindful, not only when we're sitting on a cushion or a chair, but in all the moments of our life, or strive for that, right? So bringing this way of being with ourselves, with others, with our experience, in this non-judging, kind and compassionate way. And that is really key. It helps us to see more clearly what's really happening in the moment in regards to food. It helps us see what we're bringing to the table, so to speak. What are we bringing in this moment of having this desire or this craving to eat? What is driving that? So a lot of my book, there's this theme of tuning in and checking into, what am I really hungry for? What do I truly need? And what am I truly hungry for? So with mindfulness practice, and tuning into the body, and you could begin to tune into, what is our true physical hunger? What does that feel like to be truly physically hungry? And tuning into our fullness, the different ways, different types of satiety. So we start the first few chapters, really start to establish looking at food as true nourishment, and then how do we tune into our bodies so that we can make choices that really align with what we need, and not somebody else's idea or some diet's idea. It really helps, yes, that mindful relationship to food. Developing this helps us get off of the whole diet.
The way of being.
A
way of
diet
being,
wagon.
Way of doing. Yeah. Yeah.
Yes, that
well,
is.
I like what
so,
you... Yeah, go ahead.
No, go ahead. That's fine.
I was just going to say, I like what you said about what are we really hungry for, because I would imagine that part of what you're talking with people about in your book and in your practice is, you know, replacing the hunger for food for connection. In other words, you're really looking for connection. You end up overeating. I'm being very, very simplistic here. But so instead, are you really hungry for connection? So how can you find connection in your practice and in your life rather than overeat? Is that like a very simplistic way of...
Yeah, no, exactly. The second part of the book is divided up into the 8 chapters looking at what we call the 8 bodies, or the 8 realms of nourishment that we need to really thrive. And then you talk about the very research-based, that the research showing how each of these areas are so important to our health and our well-being. And then it goes on, there's an assessment. So with mindfulness, we can bring awareness and really assess, how are we doing in this area? You know, what are we missing? What are the ingredients of this, you know, social body, social nourishment, am I missing in my life right now? What do I want to bring more of? So we look at all these different areas. And it's great. I mean, I'm having so much fun with this because I'm using it too. If I'm feeling a little off, okay. Like I worked on my book, you know, it was such a huge immersion into time in front of the computer and writing and getting it done and meeting all the deadlines. And then I kept a pretty good balance for most of the time of writing the book, especially, you know, the topic of being well-nourished. But I did get a little off balance towards the end and with all those final deadlines. And so it took some time to get back into what is a balance for me. And I was working on social nourishment, and it was great. It was just so helpful to look at it in that way. Okay, I need to work on my social nourishment because I have been so busy and said no to so much, so many plans. And now I'm seeing the fruits of that. I have all these, just a lot of really wonderful things in place and reconnected with friends, and I'm just feeling like that is all flowing. But I had to put some intention, energy, and focus there. And so I used that model. And so that's, right, so getting that current. And so in the book, it's really nicely laid out looking at these different areas. So it includes the physical nourishment, which, of course, most of us think about, and there's a lot of writing about in all the health magazines, or about exercise, nutrition, getting enough sleep. It is all very important. So looking at that, but then we also have emotional nourishment. And there's so many ways to know how to work with our emotions and find balance, cultivate balance, and nourish from the inside out. And with mindfulness tools and other tools. And then psychological nourishment, social that I mentioned, intellectual nourishment. Some people are starving for intellectual nourishment.
Intellectual, yeah. Okay. So you've got, let me just make sure I got this. We've got physical, emotional, social, intellectual, and you're differentiating between emotional and psychological?
Yes.
How are those different?
Yeah, they do overlap. So psychological is our whole relationship to thoughts and feelings and navigating that with mindfulness. And then the emotional is a little more in-depth on working with emotions, but also qualities of being and qualities of mind and experience. So how do we intentionally cultivate self-compassion? And how do we intentionally cultivate gratitude and loving kindness practice? So there's a lot in that, in the deep dive on that inner nourishment.
What did I miss? Which ones did I miss? Because there's eight.
So creative.
Creative nourishment, okay.
The creative body was also, that was really so much fun to write about. And, you know, they all overlap. So I have, there's an image, the well-nourished bowl, and it's this beautiful eight-petaled flower, and all the petals overlap. So each of these, so for example, social, you might be working on more social nourishment in your life, and it overlaps with the others. It might overlap with doing, getting involved in the more creative activities, creative or intellectual activities, which can be very social. It might feed your emotional needs and needs for connection. So it all overlaps. The creative body is not only creative activities. A lot of us may have been more creative when we were younger, or we want to reclaim that creativity that was maybe squelched by someone telling us we couldn't really paint or dance or act or whatever it may be. So it's reclaiming self-creative self-expression, and that may be through activities, or it may be through the whole section on living our life as art and being more creative in our lives, which might include being more spontaneous, more intuitive. So there's a lot of, each chapter has a lot of skills and tools besides that initial awareness and assessment. And then what we're going through, all these different ways that we could bring in these rich ingredients in this area. So is there something that you used to do that gave you so much joy, but once you began to work and a lot of different responsibilities, kind of let that go, but would be very nourishing and maybe help to fulfill you in a way that you don't feel a certain sense of emptiness that leads you to eating, for example?
Right. That's important. Okay, so before we get into I want to focus on the physical in a second here, but I want to make sure I got all these. Creative, social, emotional, psychological, physical, intellectual. So which two am I missing? I assume spiritual.
Yeah. So next we have spiritual.
Yeah.
And, of course, that can overlap with, creative, with social. It can be social.
Right.
So finding where do we connect? How do we connect and what are areas that we might want to bring in more of this in our life, create that connection to that, whatever it is for us, that connection to a higher,
right,
whatever we want to call it.
Right, and what's the eighth one then?
A deeper sense of interconnectedness, and nature, like for me, nature is such a big part of my spirituality. And so I do write a lot about nature and how that actually was for me where I discovered my sense of purpose was to bring this very deep experience that I had in nature when I was 17 of the inherent balance and harmony in the world, to bring that to others through my work. And I discovered meditation. I've already known about it, but discovered it shortly after that, and so that was part of it, because meditation can bring that to us. We don't have to, not everyone has the opportunity to be out in nature at the time. So through meditation and other practices, it's quite a lot. It's a very in-depth chapter, so more than we want to get into here. But it connects with the last one, which is worldly, and how I'm defining worldly is being in touch with what our passion and our purpose is, what we came here to do. And that might include anywhere from, you know, raising your family to community involvement to global involvement to nonprofit, whatever it is, whatever you feel is where you want to make your contribution. So it's getting in touch with passion and purpose and your contribution in the world. And if that part is squelched or we're not manifesting that, we can often feel that a sense of frustration, unfulfillment, and of course that can lead to soothing and comforting with food, with alcohol, just emotional imbalance, whatever it is. So all of these pieces are really important to being a full human being, and each of us, we have our own unique recipe, right? To use, like using the metaphor that we're our own master chef, and we can choose the ingredients that we want to make up of our lives, and we can do it consciously with awareness rather than just kind of go along on automatic pilot and wonder why we're not feeling good in all these different realms.
Okay. So this is great. These are great, eight of these. Let's focus on the physical one, particularly on nutrition. You've got nutrition, exercise, and sleep. When we work with people, because most of what we're working with them on is social and emotional, but we do a whole series of things on stress management, particularly around nutrition, exercise, and sleep. So, and we also bring in mindfulness. So this is right up our alley, which is great. But I think specifically why we wanted you on this call is because we wanted to specifically talk about nutrition and how we can, and the relationship between nutrition and mindfulness. So let's talk about, before I open it up for questions, let's talk a little bit about this idea of, first, let's be specific around nutrition. Like, what do you see as the cornerstones of a well-balanced diet? I don't mean going on a diet, but I mean, you know, what you're eating. Let's talk about that first, and then we'll go into how we can relate the idea of what you're hungry for and how we can relate that to not overeat. So let's talk about those two things first.
Yeah, sure. And I will say that this approach is very much empowering the individual. So in my book, I don't have a whole lot of in-depth on nutrition, but some basic healthy guidelines.
Right.
There are so many different diets, so many things change. We hear we're supposed to eat more of this and then less of that. So,
right.
So my approach is looking at all the research that we have and presenting some basic guidelines. And then how do you relate to those guidelines? How does that work for your body? And to mindfully explore, be curious, how you do with more carbs or less carbs. For example, that a very low-carb diet is not sustainable for most people. There can be a lot of beating oneself up around that. But what works for you to feel nourished? So what are the cornerstones? Well, I do like, I have a version of a healthy plate in my book, and just kind of have a general guideline. I think guidelines are important because otherwise we can feel like a ship with no guardrails. We need to have some idea of good nutrition. So I'm not, my approach isn't all just listening to the body, but yes, absolutely, but having some knowledge. So what is that? Well, I can tell you every single person in the field of nutrition is, well, maybe not some people working, depends where they work, but in general will agree that processed foods, highly processed foods, are not very good for us. So it's more going for the whole foods diet as much as possible. What's nice about mindful eating is we don't get into judging, making wrong, bad, good foods, bad foods, but how can we have a healthy relationship to those processed foods that, yes, they're going to be, they're around, they're in the office, they're in the grocery store, they're in that bakery that you walk by, they're in the mall with the wonderful smell of the cinnamon buns.
Cinnabons,
I actually have an example of that in my book. Those, I used to walk by those another place that I worked so many years ago. So how do we have a healthy relationship to that? They exist. Are we going to say no to that forever and then maybe fixate on it and overeat? How do we have a balanced relationship? So learning to eat mindfully, paying attention to those kinds of foods, the highly processed foods, the sweets with full attention can help us actually enjoy more but eat less.
Okay, I'm gonna push you a little bit here because I'm just wondering, like, I'm assuming you have to take some sort of stance here on what's healthy. Like, everybody thinks, you know, every study you see, you know, you'll ever see will say highly processed foods is not good for you. I think every study you'll see will say sugar is not good for you. So, like, can we take a stance on a couple things here and say, like, we need to be a relationship? So we know they're not good for us, but we know also that if we never eat them, then we're going to be, you know, crazy people. So because they're just,
well,
they're all,
and you know what? If there's some people out there that never eat them and you're fine with that and you don't fixate on it, you don't feel this great sense of loss, or you wish you could just enjoy sometimes that really yummy mother-in-law's favorite brownie or whatever it is. You know, if you're fine with that, that's great. I would say yes.
Yeah, well, the bulk of people are the opposite. I'm not going to worry really too much about the people that really cannot eat that stuff. I'm more interested in the other way because I think most people are not that disciplined, so including myself.
Yeah.
So
No, I would absolutely, absolutely agree. If you're looking at the health research and the effects, these foods do nothing for us. No.
Right.
They are
so
not
empty foods.
They are not good
highly,
for us. Yes.
Right. So
the
so
highly palatable,
yes.
The highly
yeah.
processed foods, absolutely.
Okay.
And
so,
we know more than ever now that, you know, sugar was covered up. The focus was
yep.
taken off of how bad sugar was for us and focused on fat.
Right.
So, yeah, no, absolutely. But these foods are around, so how, if we want to include them occasionally, I call them sometimes foods. I look at
okay.
our way we eat as always foods and sometimes foods.
Okay, so is there, on the healthy plate, are there other things besides highly processed foods and sugar?
Oh, no. Those aren't on my healthy plate.
No, those aren't even on
my healthy plate.
No, I mean yeah. on the healthy plate process, on the model, those ones are off of it. They're empty foods. Are there other empty foods besides highly processed foods and sugar?
Are there other empty foods that aren't on the... So the plate is... Half the plate is vegetables. You know, as a nation, we don't eat anywhere near the recommendations of the amount of vegetables. So it's just good
right.
to have that to shoot for.
Right.
Vegetables. I've got fruit is optional. It's great for you too. It's got a lot of fiber and vitamins. But that can be put into that half a plate if you like, or you can have fruit separately, or just, so I have it down as like, you know, half a serving a day if you like, but definitely we want to get that nice half a plate of vegetables, or so. It just, everybody's individual. It's just a guideline. Got a quarter of the plate protein, a quarter of the plate carbohydrates, but moving towards the complex, the whole
right.
grain carbohydrates. And then that can shift that amount. And then as much as plant-based eating as works for you in the research absolutely shows that it is healthier, plant-based whole
mm-hmm.
food diet. But it doesn't mean that you can't have, again, you know, we all come from different genetics, and we might have different health needs, metabolisms, so cutting out meat completely, I don't believe is the best for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
So, but being moderate about that. You know, we do know that there's certain things, saturated fat is inflammatory, so eating and so many diseases and chronic diseases these days are linked to inflammation. So
right.
eating, so cutting out, reducing the saturated fat, which is mostly found in animal fat, is definitely still a very healthy guideline as far as I'm concerned.
And could you talk a little bit about
the
relationship between eating and inflammation? Like, there's obviously foods that are anti-inflammatory, like blueberries, and there's ones that are more, as you just mentioned, more contributing to inflammation, like saturated fat. Can you talk to the relationship about that? Like, why does that matter? I mean, I think the audience would be interested in that.
Well, yeah. I mean, I can't really go into all the science, the detailed science of that,
no,
but
just
are certain foods that cause more inflammation in the body. Saturated fat is one of the big culprits of that. So the more that we decrease, the less inflammation. It helps to contribute to less inflammation. So eating more of a plant-based diet is going to help. It is an anti-inflammatory diet. So choosing more healthy fats, more nuts, maybe olive oil, you know, some olive oil, fish, lots of veggies and fruit, this kind of way of eating is much healthier.
So I understand the actual foods, but I think the audience would like to understand, why do we need to have an anti-inflammatory diet? In other words, what is inflammation lead to? I mean, like dementia, for example, and what tell us a little bit more about why inflammation is bad.
Well, inflammation is they're finding it more and more as a contributor to things like heart disease, to so many different chronic diseases.
Right.
Yeah, so that's probably all. I don't spend a lot of time studying, like, I couldn't name off every single disease to you that it's related to, but in general, it is more and more the root of many chronic conditions is
right.
inflammation,
right.
inflammation markers in the body, and our diet can make an impact on that. Our diet contributes to inflammation, and it can decrease inflammation.
Right, right. Okay, great. So let's open it up real quickly to the folks on the phone, and to make sure people have a chance to ask a question. We've talked about the 8 different bodies, creative, social, emotional, psychological, physical, intellectual, spiritual, worldly, and we're focusing right now on the physical, particularly on nutrition and the healthy plate, and then what's empty, like high processed foods and sugar. And so if anybody has any questions specific to them or to people in their family, whatever, go for it.
And I'd really love to address audience questions about relationship to food and
right.
as well as what are the, how to improve that. So what a lot of the book is looking at.
So does anybody have any questions?
Sue, this is Meredith. Can you hear me?
Hey, Meredith.
Hi.
Yeah.
I have a question. It's more around kind of the psychology of eating. I've been trying to lose weight for a long time. I'm approaching 50, and I'm working out quite a bit, and I've adjusted what I'm eating. I've taken out some of the stuff that I know it gets me, you know, bloated and all that stuff, and it's still tricky for me to lose weight. And what I've noticed is that some of it feels like it's emotion-based. In other words, I'm not eating because I'm hungry. I'm eating because I'm trying to quell feelings of unease or sometimes it's loneliness, sometimes it's stress. But I'm just wondering if you have any constructs for how to think about that and how to work with it to not let it sabotage you.
Nice question.
Yeah, that's a great question. So I talked earlier about establishing a practice. I'm really all for establishing a practice of mindfulness meditation because that can help us, again, develop this non-judging, kind, compassionate way of being and clear-seeing with what is present in our thoughts, our feelings, emotions, physical sensations, what we're bringing to the table. So we can practice during the day in the moment, a practice I call mindful check-in in my book, where we bring our attention to our breath, to our body. That's the first foundation of mindfulness, very accessible way to begin to quiet that busy mind, come present, notice what is present right now. Again, the breath, putting attention on the breath, maybe taking a few deep breaths to begin with to help relax the mind because the mind and the body are connected. So quiet it just a little more. And then notice, again, what is present. So that feeling you mentioned would be a feeling of, if I'm remembering correctly, a little unease, maybe a little emptiness. And by the way, very common for us when we put our attention to notice, we might be feeling a little bit of unease or off in some way. So coming present, just really meeting that with kindness and bringing a sense of curiosity to it, just noticing it. That in itself can start to create a little bit of space, a little bit of disidentification from that feeling, from that running us. And then in that space, we can make a choice, a more informed choice. Like, what is it that I truly need right now? So this, what's connected to this feeling? Is there, what thought? So that sense of unease, maybe there's a work deadline you're thinking about. But bringing that into awareness helps you see, okay, so that's what's going on right now. Can I just let go of that right now, that thought? Come back to this moment. Once we become aware, there's lots of different approaches, tools, techniques, things that we can do or not do. Just simply that awareness might help break that that hold over us. We see it for what it is. Okay, I'm not really hungry. Okay. And our thoughts and our feelings, when we start to bring awareness to them, attention to them in this way, we notice that they shift, they change, they never stay the same. We have many visitors, as in a famous Rumi poem called The Guest House, that I really love. These visitors come and go. And they can really run us if they stay below the level of conscious awareness. And they can be triggers to, as you were asking about, this eating. So there's a great saying by Viktor Frankl, quote, may not get it exactly right, but basically he says, between every stimulus, there is a response, or there is a space. Between every stimulus and response, there is a space. And in that space, there lies our freedom. So mindfulness helps us bring awareness to that stimulus, which might be that feeling of unease and that thought that's connected to it, whatever that might be, a deadline or thinking about a social interaction that you have that you're unhappy about or feel incomplete about, want to reach out to somebody, whatever it is, and that feeling, that desire to eat, bringing awareness in the way that I described with that mindful check-in helps to create that space, that clear scene of what is really going on, helps disconnect that impulse, desire to eat. And you can ask yourself, what is it that I really need right now?
So, Meredith, do you have a follow? That's a wonderful way of looking at it. Do you have a follow, Meredith?
It all makes sense, and I feel like I'm more and more successful over time at doing that. I've implemented some mindful meditation in the morning, and I'm getting a little more spaciousness. What I'm wondering also is to marry that with practical techniques. So, for example, if I do that stop and that check, and I realize, I'm really stressed about something at work or whatever, then I'm wondering if there's like a practical set of like interrupter behaviors that you suggest, like, okay, take a drink of water, wait 5 minutes, see if you are still hungry. Like, sometimes I can't even tell if I'm really hungry or if I'm just bored. So I'm wondering if you can marry it to like the practical kind of how-to stuff that
it's awesome.
Would be helpful.
Great. You're like explaining exactly what happened to me as well. Like, do I really want that thing? I mean, what I do is so that I don't have crap on my house because I know that if I am in that space, I'll just, if I have, like, good foods in my house, I'll go and eat at least a piece of an egg or, something that's protein rather than some sugar thing. That's how I do it. But it's like, because I know that I don't have as much discipline to say, well, what's the space, what's going on? I can still say to myself, I want to, I know I don't. I'm really not hungry right now, but I still want that thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So not. So just don't have the thing around. That helps.
Right.
Yeah. So I mean, on one level, there is. So when you said you don't know if you're really hungry, so what I do a lot with my personal clients or individual clients or workshops, retreats, training, we do spend a lot of time learning to identify. Getting to know our physical hunger. It doesn't necessarily come that easily. There's a lot of reasons we may not have been tuned in. So we have ways. So that's one thing. But short of that, because we can't do the whole training on that in our time together, is to, you can still check in. Ask yourself, are you physically hungry? What are your signals of hunger? But yes, it could be, there could be other triggers as well. So if you're not sure, one thing helps to kind of look back to what I call outer wisdom is, did I have enough for dinner? Did I skip a meal? If we skip meals in service to thinking we're restricting calories and it'll help us lose weight, we're actually messing things up because our body is not getting the energy and nutrition it needs at a regular time. Our bodies do best with energy, spacing our meals throughout the day, getting that nice, even blood sugar and nutrients, nourishment. So the body thinks it's starving, gives it little messages when you skip or restrict. And then what happens at the end of the day, a lot of times that desire to eat is actually being driven from the physiological level of the body, and that creates more food thoughts too. So take a look and see how is your eating throughout the day. That's the first place that you can look.
So let's get back to what Meredith said eloquently about, you know, is there in thinking about why she's doing this. She's already come like more than 50% to what's going on, which is that she feels like she's sort of not at ease, and is she bored? Is she, she's kind of questioning like what's going on, right? Which I think is great. And I think a lot of people have that, like they wonder, like they know that they're anxious because they have a deadline, because they could be bored. It could be either they have pressure to get something done, or they're the opposite. They're bored, and they don't have the pressure, but they have a different kind of pressure. Or they're, there's going to be a lot of things that they're anxious about. So people turn to eating in those situations. So I guess what Meredith asked, and I don't know if we got to it, and I want to push on this a bit, is that where in that process when you're using mindfulness in that process to discover what is going on, I mean, how do you then discipline yourself to not go for the thing that you know you shouldn't? And then there's also the judgment of that too. So there's, you're in that space, you know you shouldn't go, and it's like there's a should in there, right? So there's already a judgment because you know you want to go eat something, but you shouldn't.
Well, absolutely.
So how do you overcome that? Yeah, so how do you – so some people would be like, "This, no, I'm not going to do it. Fine, I'm done. I'm going to go do something different." But then everybody has that discipline. So how can you help them in that moment of truth?
So one of the things that really helps in the moment of truth, in my book there's 5 steps to mindful eating and living. That first is awareness we've been talking about. The second is intention setting. Intention is really, really helpful. So once you have that awareness, and then you even have skills and tools, which is the third step, skills and tools, but what will help you to use your wisdom in that moment and make a choice that is supportive and healthy to you. So getting clear why, not just, oh, I want to lose weight, but connecting, when we connect our intentions to something more meaningful, not just a, kind of an outside standard cultural value, and it may very well be health, I'm not just discounting that, but other things that are very meaningful to you, like I had a client recently, her intention was as simple as, just want to feel good. Wanted to feel good in all levels, mind, body, spirit, with her intention. Want to feel healthy, want to feel good. Or I want to make choices that, where I'll live long and healthy and be there for my grandchildren, or be able to complete this project that is my life's work, whatever it is. Something that is motivating, connected to values. In your own words, and there's a lot of steps how we can do that. But having that intention to come back to in that moment is like an arrow that you can point to your overall destination, making those self-caring, nourishing choices. So those choices could include, maybe heretical, it could include having that snack or that food, but eating it very consciously and very mindfully. So eating that food, so what is eating mindfully is there's a whole process with that. And so one of them is really becoming aware, using all your senses with the food. So you're getting that full nourishment, full experience. And when we give ourselves permission to eat these foods, and my workshop will work with challenging foods, and there's a lot of ahas around that, but realizing, huh, you can actually have, eat some of these foods with small amounts and feel like you've had enough when you eat it mindfully. And without having all that chatter, you mentioned feeling guilty or beating yourself up or, oh, no, I shouldn't have that. We're getting rid of those shoulds and shouldn'ts. But so when you're in the driver's seat, most of the time, we say, hey, nobody's perfect. But this does help you feel more and more in the driver's seat and make mindful, compassionate choices. And sometimes that might include, I really want to have that delicious dessert that I brought home from the restaurant or from a special occasion. But I don't even need it all. I'm gonna have part of this piece, and I'm gonna really enjoy it. And then I'm gonna check in and see what else I'm gonna eat. So we can eat this. We can still eat mindfully, or we can choose to do another nourishing activity or something that will directly address what we became aware of that we were stressed about, an action step, or make a plan. Put, maybe there's a step we need to take, put it in the calendar, get it out of your worry zone into reality. Make a plan for when you're going to address that. That can help.
Okay.
So intention, letting yourself, as an option, maybe eat that mindfully, or having your list of nourishing activities. I work a lot with that evening time. That's a big time for people when cravings can arise, and it can be different for each person exactly why and what can help support that. But these are some of the things, some of the tips that can help.
Let's go over those things again, because I you said you had the list there. You had intention, and did you have a couple other things?
Well, I have the five steps in general.
Yeah, what are the five steps?
Living. So that is awareness.
Right.
And bringing awareness to these different realms, and then I have a whole checklist around that. And then intention, setting a very clear intention. Why do you want to make these changes?
Got it.
And I will add with that, okay, that self-compassion, learning to be compassionate with ourselves, is a wonderful motivator. We want to take better care of ourselves. That's
right.
In the emotional nourishment chapter.
What's the third one?
The third one is skills and tools. So we've touched upon some of those skills and tools today, a variety of skills and tools for really all these areas, all those bodies, and then with in the eating realm, and they all interrelate. And then the next, the fourth is outer support. So there's lots of different ways that we can support our intentions. One of those might be not having those foods in the house if we know they are so challenging for us. But I worked with many people that can then bring those foods back in, some of them that they want to, after learning how to eat mindfully.
Right.
But it's okay to not have them in your house if that's easier for you. A little more about outer support, that also includes social support. You might have a check-in buddy. You might join a group. You might use apps, smartphones,
little
bells to remind you about things. Whatever you can structure your environment, all of these things are very real and can help support those intentions. And the last one is inner resources. So cultivating all these wonderful inner resources that I've been touching upon, talking about, certainly mindfulness is the overall arching one, and self-developing, self-compassion, loving-kindness, learning how to work with the judging mind. These are just some of the things that are just inner resources. And so you'll see in my model at the bowl, the well-nourished bowl, on the outside of it, we've got this container of mindfulness. We have these qualities, mindfulness, self-compassion, kindness, loving-kindness. Those are actually our inner resources that we're holding it all.
And, right. Yeah. Well, this has been really wonderful. Thank you. I wanted to just go over again the eight bodies: creative, social, emotional, psychological, physical, intellectual, spiritual, worldly. We spent more time on the physical, and particularly the five steps to mindful eating: awareness, intention, skills and tools, outer support, and inner resources. So really good stuff. Again, the book is Well Nourished: Mindful Practices to Heal Your Relationship with Food, Feed Your Whole Self, and End Overeating. What are you hungry for is a wonderful question to ask yourself. And you can follow Andrea on Twitter. She's at well_nourished_. You can go to her website, mindfuleatingtraining.com, or yourwellnourishedlife.com. And is there an email that people can send questions to you?
Yes, absolutely. Andrea at mindfuleatingtraining.com.
Perfect. Awesome.
And I do have a local workshop coming up, too, so you can find out about all of that on the website.
Awesome. When's your workshop?
The workshop is December 17th to 21st. It's on the book on well-nourished living and taking a deep dive into everything we've been talking about.
Nice.
And nourishing bodies.
Perfect. Okay, great. Thanks again, Andrea. I really appreciate it. And I wanted to tell everybody we will not be doing any Wise Talk. We take December off. And we'll be coming back in January with our new theme, and that will be on influencing and persuasion. That's going to be our theme for 2018. And so we will get back with everybody on that sometime in the beginning of January in terms of what date that we'll kick it off. Thanks again, everybody. Have a wonderful holiday. Get some rest. Have a good relationship with all that good stuff we're going to have to eat. All right. See you later, everybody. Thanks again.
Thank you.